Today's reading is from Hebrews. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to share ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered abuse suffered for the Christ to be gathered wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking ahead to the reward. The word of God for the people of God.
Good job reading scripture this morning. I invite you to take out your outline for the message today and use this as we go through this message. I want to begin with a story I first heard told by John Maxwell. It's about a halfway hut on a mountain in Switzerland, and it's exactly what it sounds like, except it's more like a lodge than a hut. And it's located along a hiking path halfway up a mountain, and it's a place where climbers, hikers typically stop on their way to the top. The manager of the halfway hut says that on a typical day, the same kind of scenario plays out. A group below at the foot of the mountain starts out with their guide leading them. They climb really hard. All of the joy and the thrill of getting started on this adventure by midday starts to wane. And they arrive at this hut and pleasantly are surprised to enter a room with a warm fire and the smell of food cooking. And they can take off their packs and unlace their boots and relax for a minute and eat a hot meal. And after a while, the guide gets up and says, "It's time to keep going. So let's put our boots on, let's get our packs on. If we're going to reach the top this afternoon, we have to get started now." And the manager of the hut says, "Almost always you can count on it. There's a certain number in the group that will say to the others, 'You all go ahead. This is pretty nice right here. You go ahead to the top, we're okay. We'll catch up with you tomorrow on the way down.'" So the group going up the mountain doesn't say a whole lot. They put their packs on, they get geared up, and out the door they go. And the manager says for the next few hours, it's a party in the hut. The cards come out, people gather around the fire, they're playing games, they're telling jokes, they're even making a little fun of the group that's going on. Oh, can you imagine how they're feeling about right now? Don't they wish they could be where we are? But by late afternoon, he says, you can always predict that it's going to quiet down, the laughter's going to go away. People are going to start making their way toward the big picture window, and someone will pull out a pair of binoculars and they'll pass them around as they can see the members of their group nearing the top of the mountain. The next morning, when the people who stayed behind in the lodge wake up, there's not a lot of laughter, there's not a lot of talking. It's a pretty somber scene as they just wait for their group to return. And when that group comes back at midday, it's a total reversal of the day before. The group that went to the top are the ones now laughing and high-fiving each other and celebrating and telling the stories about the view from the top and what it was like to reach the summit, and the others just quietly listen. You'll see a statement at the top of your outline. Anything significant requires sacrifice. Anything significant requires sacrifice. It's a universal truth. If you want to reach the top of the mountain, you've got to give up something. If you want to be on a team that wins the championship, you have to sacrifice for it. If you want to lose weight, if you want to get in shape, if you want to learn a new subject, it requires sacrifice. There's even a position in baseball called the sacrifice hitter. The batter who gets an out for what? The runner on base to advance. Some things in life advance only through sacrifice. It's a universal truth, which makes it a spiritual truth as well. Last week, we talked about tithing. We talked about what tithing is, the giving of 10% to God, and how it is a practice discussed mostly in the First Testament. There are many Christians who say, well, that really is an Old Testament pattern. It doesn't apply to Christians today. It's not a part of the New Testament. We live under a different guideline and a different standard. But if you come to the New Testament and you think that the standard of giving is somehow going to be a little lighter and easier, be careful. The only time Jesus gave an example of a standard for giving, it was a widow. He observed putting in her last two coins in the temple treasury. Look at the verse from Luke 21. But she, out of her poverty, has put in all she had to live on. It is as if Jesus was saying, that is what giving is like. No wonder Jesus took note of this woman. He was just days away from walking to the cross. No wonder somebody who gave their all caught his attention. He was about to give his all. He was about to give his life. But Jesus knew that that sacrifice would not be in vain. He believed in that truth that some things advance only through sacrifice. That's the theme of the entire letter to the Hebrews. The entire letter of the Hebrews is about the significance of sacrifice in the Christian life. And for the majority of the letter in the opening, it talks about the significance of the sacrifice of Christ and what it means for us and what is advanced because of that sacrifice. But then the writer gets to chapter 11. As if to kind of sum up the whole topic, the writer goes back to the very beginning of faith and leads us down a hall of fame of the heroes of faith. And with each hero, talks about how they demonstrated this truth, they sacrificed, and what was advanced because of it. So you start walking down this hall, and the first display you come to is the display of Adam. And it talks about how Adam sacrificed, and then it comes to Adam's son Abel and what Abel sacrificed, and then it comes to Enoch, then it comes to Abraham, and you leave the display of Abraham, then you come to Isaac, then you come to the display of Moses. And like the other heroes of faith, all of Moses' credentials are listed. Everything that Moses accomplished in his career, all of his statistics are listed right there to show why he was worthy for induction into the Hall of Fame of Faith. But then Moses gets an addendum. Moses gets an added statement that's not about his accomplishment, but the significance of it. It gives us a little insight into a deeper spiritual truth about this topic of sacrifice. And that is how it can be a blessing. How sacrifice is actually a hidden secret in the spiritual life for experiencing reward. So I want us to pause this morning for the remainder of the message, and let's just linger in front of Moses' display in the Hall of Fame. And just like going to Cooperstown or another Hall of Fame, you'll want to pull out your cell phone and get your camera ready. And you'll want to take a picture of the display so that you can tell your kids and your grandkids about going to the Hall of Fame and about the display of Moses and what it teaches us today. So one of the first things we learn about Moses and how his sacrifice can be a blessing is that he saw opportunity to let his position make an impact. He saw the opportunity to see that his position could make an impact. In that first addendum statement in Hebrews 11, it says, by faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called a son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to share ill treatment with the people of God. It's a powerful thing when somebody looks at their place in life and they say, you know what, my position can be of blessing to somebody else. But now the somebody else was not a different people. It was Moses' people. It was the people from which he came. He was the son of a Hebrew slave. His life was spared from Pharaoh's edict of executing all the male children under 2 years old because his mother put him in a basket and sent him down the river. Pharaoh's daughter found him. She took him out of the river, and then she searched for the birth mother and asked the birth mother to raise her own son, understanding that the son now belonged to her. Moses got to grow up in two worlds. He got to grow up in the world of privilege and wealth and prosperity as a prince, but also understand that these slaves are his people too. And one day when he became an adult, he realized, I'm in a position to help my people. And he identified with them. He said that I am one of them. Were it not for the grace of God, I would be dead or I would be a slave. Anytime a group of people are called privileged, that means that there are some people somewhere in the shadows who are underprivileged. And Moses was willing to identify with the underprivileged and let his position make an impact. So this is a good place for a definition. Let's be clear about what we're talking about when we talk about sacrifice. Sacrifice is giving up something of value for something of greater value. Giving up something of value for something of greater value. It's not giving pennies to the Salvation Collection. It's saying, no, I'm going to give something that really is significant in my life. I'm going to let my position make an impact. I'm going to make a sacrifice. This is valuable to me. It doesn't come easy. I'm giving something big time because what I'm giving to is of even greater value. The Heartland Film Festival comes to a close today. One of the movies featured this year is titled Many Beautiful Things. It's about Lilias Trotter, a young woman who grew up in the privileged home of 18th century England. She was quite wealthy, and she was an amazingly gifted artist. In fact, her mother and others believed she could become one of the most famous painters in England. But she was influenced by a Dwight Moody evangelistic crusade, and she gave her life to Christ. And she said, I want to be used for whatever advances God's purpose. She started volunteering at the YMCA and would go out on the streets of London at night to rescue young women from prostitution. Now remember, this was the same period as Jack the Ripper. Young woman of privilege going out to rescue prostitutes. One night in a dream, she felt God saying, I want you to go be a missionary to another country and another place. And North Africa came to mind. She didn't know what that meant. But one day, she went to a lecture from a missionary in Algeria, and he ended his message by saying, who here is God calling to go to Algeria? And she leapt out of her seat and said, God is calling me to go. She spent the next 40 years of her life as a missionary. She was willing to give up her position to make an impact for others. At the end of the movie, there's a very powerful line where she says, life is not about what you have, it's about what you sacrifice. Life is not about what you have, it's what you sacrifice. Something else we learn from Moses is that he realized others paid a price for his place. He realized others paid a price for his place. I believe that this is what got him in the game of God's liberation movement. Early in the book of Exodus, we read about what happened to Moses one day. After Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew woman. I believe this is what changed Moses. He had been living in two worlds. He had been a prince. He understood that he was part of these slave people. But that day, something snapped. He realized that the only reason he was in a position that he was in was because of the sacrifices of these people. That these were the ones that were giving him his position of being a prince. That other people were paying a sacrifice. And that day he said, "It's my turn." That's a great thing. That's a great thing in the soul and the spirit of a person when they come to discover that they are really the product of other people's sacrifice and they go, "Oh, it's my turn now. It's my turn." Think about our own church. I mean, right now, you're sitting on other people's sacrifices. Let me give you a quick example. When this building was being built, or rather, when it was being planned, the church had a campaign called Expect a Miracle. They had a big goal, and it would be a miracle to raise the money. And a young boy named Bennett Fuson got excited. This is a picture of Bennett today. Bennett is in law school. His father is Brad Fuson, our church attorney. So like father, like son. And I will have the privilege this coming May of marrying Bennett and his fiance. But when that campaign took place, this is what Bennett looked like. And I need to say, if Bennett's watching this today, that your dad sent us this picture, even though we didn't ask you for permission, Bennett. So take it up with Dad. But a young 7-8-year-old lad got excited about this idea that I can be a part of a miracle. So when it came time for commitment Sunday, he broke open his piggy bank with all of his savings and he put the full amount in a bag and he brought it to church. And the offering plate came along and he was about to dump this bag in the offering plate and his dad said, "Son, you can't do that. I mean, that thing's too heavy. You know, we don't weigh these ushers down. Just after the service, take it to Dr. Millard." So the service ended, Bennett took the bag up to Kent and told him what it was for, and Kent thanked him for his offering to the campaign, and he said, I couldn't get over how excited Bennett was. He was just so happy to give it. And when he ran off, his dad said, "You know, he's not used one penny of his savings for himself for 6 months. Now, I don't know what the value of that bag of coins was, and to be honest, it's probably not worth more than a few square inches of this building. But I bet no one gave a greater sacrifice." We're all sitting on somebody's sacrifice today. And it's a powerful thing when we realize that, when we realize that where we are, what we get to enjoy is by somebody else's giving and sacrificing, and then we say, "Oh, it's my turn. It's my turn." One last lesson from the life of Moses. He focused on what was gained, not given up. He focused on what was gained. That's what makes a sacrifice a desire. When you're not thinking about how much does this cost me? What am I going to give up? But you're thinking only about what does my gift get to do? What is going to be gained as a result of my gift? So what we heard about Moses earlier, the last statement in the display in the Hall of Fame, is where it says he considered abuse suffered for the Christ to be greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking ahead to the reward. He was looking ahead to the reward. Now, if you're looking at this display for very long, you might stare at that statement and say, I think the writer got it wrong. Did the writer not realize that Jesus came 1,300 years after Moses? Why would he say that what Moses did was for the Christ? Did he get confused? So I started focusing on that this week, and I found an interesting statement in my study Bible. This is what it says about that verse. Although Moses' understanding of the messianic hope was extremely limited, he chose to be associated with the people through whom that hope would be realized. He chose to be associated with the people through whom that hope would be realized. Have you ever thought that that's what we're doing in a stewardship campaign? That's what we do every year in a stewardship campaign. It's about getting ready for what we'll do in just a couple of Sundays on November the 8th. Next Sunday, we're going to come back and we're going to focus on the blessing that comes from serving. We're going to have the ministry showcase. We'll get to display all of the ways that we can use our gifts to make a difference. But on the 8th, we'll come like we do every year. We'll have the chance to fill out a commitment of our intention of what we want to do in the year 2016. How we're going to honor God with our talents, with our treasures, our gifts, all that God gives us. Have you ever thought that what we're doing when we do that is we are associating ourselves with the people through whom a hope is going to be realized? But we can't see that now. It just says we believe it. We believe that God will take what we give and God is going to form the faith of little babies, just like we baptized a while ago. That God will take our gifts and turn them into tangible opportunities to bring healing to people, to relieve suffering somehow, to educate, to develop, to counsel, to build up. God will transform. We don't know that. It's not happened yet, but we associate ourselves. We give now believing that that hope is going to come about. We don't focus on what we're giving up. We focus on the gain that will be brought to other people. Dr. Evan Kane O'Neill practiced medicine in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. He experimented and developed a new advancement in medicine called anesthesia. It had only been around about 50 years, and that had only been general anesthesia, ether, where people would have to be put under for surgery. But more and more people were finding this a challenge because of their own medical conditions where they would have problems with general anesthesia. And what did they do? What were their options if they needed surgery? So Dr. O'Neill started experimenting with what we call today local anesthesia. But people said, that cannot work. He showed how it was effective on animals and lab rats. But people said, no, if those animals could scream in pain, I'm sure they would. There's no way. There's no way you can operate on a person and not have them completely asleep. No matter how many lectures he gave, people were not convinced. So one day, he went into the operating room, he laid down on the table, he put the mirrors in place, and he shot himself with Novocaine and removed his own appendix. Took a scalpel, opened himself up, and looking into the mirrors, removed his appendix, and then sewed himself back together. Now, somebody's either an idiot or they really do believe it. You sacrifice enough in your life, they're going to say the same about you. You're an idiot for giving that much of your wealth and your resources for something that has not even been proven yet. Yeah. Maybe I am an idiot, but I'm an idiot for Christ. Because I'm choosing to associate myself with a people through whom a hope is going to be realized that it's going to be of benefit to other people. I'm not focusing on my risk. I'm focusing on the gain that other people will discover. So as we close today, I want to offer a couple of questions as we think about a couple of weeks from now. And we think about that opportunity to stake a claim in that hope. We often come to a commitment Sunday and we ask the question, what should I give? That's not a bad question, but I think there are some better ones. When we focus on what should I give, we do the math. We kind of predict, am I going to get a raise next year? Did I get a raise this year? What are my bills going to be? We try to figure that. This is what I can afford to do. What should I give? Let me offer a couple of better questions. And I encourage you to write these down as you begin to think about what you might put on your card. God, what is the difference you want to make through me? That's a different question than what should I give. God, what is the difference you want to make through me? That invites me to think about the position that God has put me in. And then another question, it's a little bit longer. How can I demonstrate my conviction? How can I demonstrate my conviction in the hope you want to bring? That is a sacrifice question.